keep that in mind. But did anybody see anything in the summary that we got that is incorrect? Do we have a quorum?
Just wondering the same thing. We got 8.
Is Tom on the phone?
Tom? We're close, Jeff.
Tom, are you on?
Tom will be joining up with Jeff, sir. Yes.
14.
We're in. Okay. All right. One little note. These microphones record very well. I had a cough at the last meeting. That's about all you hear when you go to the recording. And I don't see how to turn them off. So all I can recommend is that you put in your pocket something.
Okay. I'll throw it overboard.
All right, the first item is striped bass. Who's going to lead us on that one?
I have one announcement.
Okay.
The restrooms are closed on the fourth floor and the third floor. So if you need to take a break, you can have the second floor walk down two flights. They're open, there's no accommodation.
Let me add. The first door that you pass is the ladies' room. Don't go in the second door, because the second door is the ladies' room as well. Third door, okay? All right, Rockfish.
You made that mistake.
I almost made it.
I made it be the most important thing we discussed tonight. You're not going anywhere, Lil. All right. Try and keep this one fairly short. We've gone over it month after month after month now, it seems like, for a year and a half. We're down to the final few things here on Addendum 4 for the striped bass management plan. We need to establish the recreational striped bass fishery management measures for this year, both for the bay and the coast. We also have a proposal before the commission this month about modifying the definition provisions of a management area up in the northwestern part of the bay involving the commercial fishery. So first, on the recreational striped bass fishery, the coastal fishery specifically, as you remember, had to take a 25% reduction from 2013 harvest, actually from the Amendment 6 quotas.
No, I'm right. Harvest. Recreational.
Harvest. Right, yeah. There's so many parts to this. Anyway, so that on that 25% reduction, you'll remember we came forward with a group of options we worked up with FMAC last November, sending in with our implementation plan in December. AFSMSC's board this past month reviewed all of our options that we put forward, said okay. Now, one thing we had already done, which was part of the Addendum 4, was we went ahead and put in place one of the options in January, and that was the 28-inch minimum size limit with a one-per-person, per-day possession limit. That met one of the requirements. And remember, we could submit other options along the way, and we did. So we currently have in our regulation the one fish at 28 inches. We also submitted for review and were approved to consider the two-fish possession limit with a 33-inch minimum size limit, a two-fish bag limit, one in the slot, one in the trophy, the slot being 28 to 34 inches, and the trophy being 36 and above, and then another one, two-fish bag, one slot, one trophy, 28 to 36-inch slot, and a 38-inch minimum trophy size limit. We have received public comment on these items. And so far, all the public comment has been in support of the current regulation, the 28 inches and one fish. I'm not aware of any other public comment we've received so far for any other option but to maintain what we already put in place January 1st. These options do go before the commission next Tuesday, and we are looking for an FMAC endorsement on these options.
If you want to go ahead and have that discussion now, because everything else that follows is pretty straightforward.
Do we want to do one at a time? Do the coastal and then do the...
That's what I'm suggesting, is go ahead and knock this out now, because the rest are straightforward options.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
For the current regulation, one fish, minimum 28 inches for the coastal.
All right. Do we have a second? Okay. We better discuss it first then, I guess.
What was the motion?
28 inches with a one fish possession limit, the current regulation in the coast.
Did it get a second?
It did not. Tom, are you seconding it?
Oh, yes, I will second it.
Okay. Well, let's debate it then. Did that...
This is for the coastal fishery, just to make sure.
Yes.
Okay.
The information you got from the public, was that... did that include charter captains? I would think a charter captain might want to opt for two fish with a little bit larger size limit, so I want to make...
I doubt it was charter captains.
Jeff, I the charter boats at the fishing center, they want the two fish with the 28 to 34 and then one over 36.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please.
The Connie and Steve at Long Bay Point, the marinas in the bay and at Dockside, they would like to see the two fish 33. They said they feel that from a charter standpoint, that boats are more apt to charter with them if they can go catch two fish versus one. And they also said it's more conservative to go with the two fish 33 than the one at 28. So they wanted me to pass that along from a charter boat standpoint. The marinas that are inland would rather see that.
Would they be happy with the slot limit, two fish, one in the slot?
They just told me on the 33. I think from a law enforcement standpoint, if we can keep it simpler, you know, 33-inch minimum versus slot sizes, I think is better. It's cut and dry. It's simple.
And, Joe, what did your public comment was for which one, you say?
The current regulation, 28 inches and one fish.
But I'm sure they'd be happy with, you know, two either way versus the one. That's their goal.
Does anybody have a feel for how many 28-inch fish you actually catch on the coast? My experience has been there are very few that are that small when I'm fishing off the coast. And 33 wouldn't be a problem, but that...
Not that small. Not really.
Nothing to do with the size of fish greater.
Right, but do they find many 28s?
Frankly, I've looked at the data. They don't find many fish. Right now, there's zero for Emirates, zero.
Good Lord.
For 2014. So that's preliminary data, whether it will change a little bit. Uncertain, but the last 4 years have been what they used to say the pits for the coastal fishing.
Okay.
Yeah, it hasn't even been an issue the last few years.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll change this year. Ernie, when you fish off with your nets and stuff, do you see many 28 to 33s?
I've seen years when they were all that size, but that was years ago. Now you have the slots is filled out, so we don't use nets to catch them. So I very seldom see one under about 30 or 31. But I no longer fish nets till we catch a 28-inch fish. Most of them are going to be over 33 inches.
Yeah, most of the ones that gill netters catch in the ocean fish in the spring of the year in April and May are going to be that jumbo category, 35, 36 or better.
Yeah.
So I think the majority of the fish are larger fish.
Okay, but let's remember that this is involving the January to March fishery and then the after the trophy season fishery through the summer into the summer recreationally. Okay, there's already a trophy provision in place for May, or that will be in place for May, no adjustment coming to that. So
what you see in April, May is not necessarily the fishery that's so popular in November and December in the recreational coastal fishery.
Ernie? Beth is our big fisher person, so we need Beth's comment.
The times I've fished coastal for rockfish, I have caught 32-inch fish. I've caught 36-inch fish, usually in the beginning, January, February area, over by the Green Can, if anyone wanted to know, but it hasn't been recent that I've done that fishing there. I have talked to a couple people that did do some charter fishing, and they did tell me they were catching some in the lower range, but that was, you know, months ago, of course. I mean, they are there, so, I mean.
Okay. The people that talk that you talk to, do they give a preference?
I talked to them about it. This was like months ago, a couple months ago. I mean, I haven't talked to anybody recently that's been catching any, so.
Okay, well, we need to make a recommendation. We have a motion for, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
On this procedure and how we, if somebody makes a motion, somebody seconds it, and we all vote, they're looking for a recommendation
right.
from us. There will be public comment for the council, or
for the commission meeting. This is a big public hearing item,
okay.
So there'll actually be public comment. We'll be taking written public comment through middle of the day next Monday, and then on Tuesday there is an actual public comment period for public.
We have just enough for a quorum to vote. If people abstain, how does that affect the quorum? It doesn't, does it?
No.
That's a point of procedure. I didn't know. That's what I wanted to figure out. Okay. Thanks.
Is there anybody in the audience that has an opinion they'd like to share with us on this? Correct size. Yes, sir. Please. Come up to the front, if you would, please. Give us your name for the record.
My name is Wes Blow. Just to clarify, is this for just the rest of this year, coastal season?
No, this is for the time it takes the ASMSC to do an updated, what they call a stock assessment. So my expectations are 2 years minimum, maybe three the way things drag out. And if I may, talk for a second.
Please.
The situation is that we are taking a reduction. It has a 50% probability overall. Put all the states together. If they all take the reduction, there's a 50% probability that the goal of the ASMSC will be reached, which is to lower the fishing mortality rate or the kill rate from fisheries. So we're starting off in an awkward place because on the commercial fisheries, with the exception of Virginia, I think Maryland came close, Delaware came close, some of the commercial fisheries like North Carolina and Massachusetts and others, for the coast, if you remember what Joe showed you, there wasn't a reduction in the coastal commercial fisheries. We did it down to 138,000 fish. There was actually an increase. So that 50% probability tourism channel. And when you finish what you're doing, I'm going to be nice and tell you the staff recommendation after you finish your business.
All right. Yes, sir.
Well, with that information, with what one gentleman said about law enforcement and the charter business, you know, two fish would be very helpful for them to get charters. There have been no fish caught in the last several years coastal, basically. I would strongly recommend a two fish 33-inch. Easy law enforcement. The charter guys could get some business if the fish come back. That'd just be my suggestion.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Yes, sir.
Good evening. I'm Mike Avery. I'm both a recreational fisherman, fish with my friends. I'm a part-time charter captain, too. It's been since 2012 since I've caught any coastal rocks, and even then, it was some tough fishing to reach a two-fish limit, if we even got a limit. 2013, caught none. 2014, I caught none. I made one attempt in 2015. Lots of bait, lots of whales eating bait, no rockfish. So it's my thinking that no matter what recommendation you come up with, we're going to achieve the cuts simply because the fish aren't there. And so if some fish do happen to come in 2016 and beyond, I think it's going to be a rare occasion, and I would like to for the committee to consider the two fish limit like Wes Blow just recommended. And personally, I don't even care which one of those three options of the three. It would be nice to be able to, if you make the effort to go out in the coastal season, on the rare occasion that the fish do come back inside, if they ever do, that we at least have an opportunity to catch two fish. And that's what I recommend to the committee. Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Would you like to speak now before we vote, Rob?
No. That would be unfair.
Well, I would think if whatever we pass on to the, that we'll do it that way. All right, we have a motion for one fish at 28, and it's seconded. Any comment from the committee on the motion?
I'd like to make a comment.
All right, sir.
I think that anything we do in Virginia is not really seen by the reduction because they don't count what we catch in January and February. Period. So we're not talking about meeting numbers here by ASMFT standards. We may get some catch in December, but my recollection is it's never very much from the overall coastal amount. So that isn't to me really the issue other than being in compliance with ASMFT rules. The real issue I have here is every time we have to make reductions like this, we always go through and say, how can we do this that if the fish really come back, we can kill as many fish as we can possibly do? And that's what you're talking about with anything that's a two fish minimum or two fish limit. The only way I could support anything that's a two fish bag limit is if you take one of the slots and instead of saying two fish, one in the slot and one trophy worth 36 inches and with just a 2-inch no tank in it, if you up that up into like a 42-inch minimum for the trophy size, sure, where you have 6 inches of no tank, I could support something like that. But not this concept of two fish at 33 for just a 2-inch no tank slot on it. The real question we have to do here is, are we going to be conservation-minded about this and try to maintain this fishery and get it better or not? If we push it as hard as we can, we will not be doing that. And that's my general comment.
Thank you. All right. As far as the motion that we have on the table, all in favor, please raise your right hand. And that's for one fish at 28 inches.
I say aye.
All right. That'll do. Three. All opposed? Got five. Motion fails. Would someone like to make another motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion. And I've been texting David Wright. He has high hopes. He's been doing it a long time. He's the one. He still thinks that the two fish, the slot limit, the 28 to 34 and the 36, he thinks two fish at 33 can be tough. So I'm going to make a motion for the two fish, the one between 28 and 34 and then one over 36.
All right. Do we have a second?
Which one was that again, Skip?
The
third one.
Third, yeah.
See?
Yes.
All right. No second? No second. So the motion fails. Try once more. Yes, sir.
I'll make a motion to go with the two fish possession limit at 33 inches.
Do we have a second for that? Okay, we have a second. Any comment on the motion?
I can
guess my comment would be, you know, I really don't have a whole lot to say about this. It doesn't affect me. And I think, you know, we're at home when they do catch fish, they're usually bigger fish. But there's really not much activity out of home. There's a little bit out of Watchaprig, but not a lot of activity out of Watchaprig either.
And from staff's viewpoint, you don't hear much inside the barrier islands. They don't get anything near 28 inches, do they? I've never seen anybody inside catch.
Well, they wouldn't make
20
inches.
Yeah, so
give it another year or two.
I just don't want to cheat them. Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask staff, if you go to 2 over 33 inches, does that help with fish mortality rate? Since you don't have a trophy size or and you're trying to fish for that bigger fish.
CC's opinion on that, it actually increases discards.
It increases.
Increases discards. It's, you know, you're going to. You may get into that 28 to 33-inch range of fish coming in, depending on what your class is coming through, and you could actually be increasing discards by going up to that level. But it was one of the tabled options in Addendum 4 that was made available to all the states. But they did comment that...
just a moment. Wait a minute.
Okay.
No, it isn't. Just a minute. Just a minute. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Were you through?
That was the technical committee's opinion on these other options. Where even though they were approved within Addendum 4, options like 33 inches would probably lead to more discards. Even with the slot and trophy options, their opinion was it could lead to some high grading issues. So they did advise the management board to take a lot of caution accepting those items, but the board did accept them in Addendum 4. So. But they did have reservations about those options.
Well, all right, Tom. I'm sorry.
That's
well, no, finish your...
So for the Virginia specific test, do we have any specific or stock size survey data that indicates what the distribution of harvest is in Virginia during the primary time when we catch these fish in the coastal season, which is January?
That's a loaded question, Tom. You know we don't have anything in January.
Powers.
So the point is that we don't know what we're doing as far as how good of a saving for the 33 inch minimum is, because what we could find from the statistics is that we catch a lot of fish in that age when the fish are here, in that size bracket, when the fish are here. And so there's it's actually no change.
Thank you. Yeah, did you want to finish?
Yeah, my next question would be, which one of these options has the least amount of fishing mortality rate? Since fishing mortality rate seems to be a big issue all the time.
The one option the technical committee leaned towards itself probably the most was the one that's currently in place. It was seen as the one that's the most giving. You get your fish at 28, you're not going through a high-grade situation. You know, that's the one they looked at as being the strongest option. That was also one of the leading, that was also probably why it was the option that came out of Addendum 4 for immediate implementation, and everything else had to go under review. We had to put that in place if we wanted to open up on January 1st. So that was the strongest option. Again, TC opinion, it's the board's decision on what goes forward.
Thank you.
Okay, Ernie?
I think the first option would be a strong option if people had to quit fishing when they caught one fish, but you might actually make the mortality worse because you will have some individuals, not a lot, but you have some individuals that have a 29-inch fish to keep fishing, they catch a 34-inch fish, 29-inch fish gone overboard, and to keep on fishing, they get one even bigger than that. So, I mean, you know, two fish is going to probably be less because if they catch one 29 inches and then they catch a bigger one, they're not going to throw the 29-inch one overboard just because they had a bigger one, because they're going to be allowed to have both. And human nature is human nature. And you're going to have individuals that are going to do that.
Well, compliance, I'll just make this point now that you know that compliance with all regulations is a big concern of board, and the technical committee has actually also been tasked that later this year we're to start factoring in compliance and the reductions, which means there could be some little tweaks of this down the road as well if there is some factor determined that would show compliance means we need to be more take up a stricter approach. But that's work to come at the TC level that hasn't happened yet, but they have tasked the TC to do it.
Okay. Yes, please.
The chart we got last time, wasn't the two at 33 more conservative than the one at 28?
It was worked up under a different set of data than the one at 28, so they weren't comparable by percentage. Under that approach, it met all the criteria and it was blessed, but the one at 28 was worked up differently than the 33-inch set. That was definitely a full coastal approach on that 28. So.
Well, we're at a point where we have no recommendations.
You have a motion, I believe, still on the table or not?
I don't think we got a second, did we?
We did.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
You
did.
Okay. And that was for?
Number the
233.
233. 233. By Scott and the second by Mead.
I'm sorry. Appreciate it. And we don't know how that ranks exactly with dead throwbacks. All right, well, we have a motion. All in favor of that motion, please raise your right hand. We've got, yeah, I'll vote on this one as well.
Five.
Yep, five.
All opposed? Same motion? Two.
Abstain.
All right, that's our recommendation.
I'm opposed also.
Okay.
Thank you.
5-3-1.
Read the motion. That's to pass. Which one is passed?
This would be FMAC is recommending the two fish possession limit with a 33-inch minimum size limit. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. O'Reilly.
Yes. So rather than wait until Tuesday, the 24th, since we get along so well and everything, I thought I'd tell you what Fisheries Management has in store, which is the current regulation, one fish at 28. Quite a few reasons why. The first is we're in a reduction phase. The ASMFC may want to call these conservation equivalents, but I'm the author of the gray trout conservation equivalency, and I know how that worked when we used to say you can have, you know, 10 fish or you can have 14 fish at a bigger size limit, 10 fish at a smaller size limit. It's unknown. I have asked the ASMFC to come back this next meeting in May and show everyone what it would be like to take all of the weakest options and throw them together and then run the scenario that they did to get the 50% probability and see where it is. I already know where it's going to be. It's not going to make it. The way the ASMFC deliberated on this, there was an opening motion of one fish at 32 inches, and that lasted about 5 minutes, and then there was a motion for one fish at 28 inches, and that lasted about 5 minutes, and then there was another amended motion, finally, which was passed, to say one fish at 28 plus anything that's conservation equivalency. So the door was opened up, but we already have some doors open which really bother me. One is January and February. Now, each year we go through a routine where, despite the fact that the National Marine Fisheries Service and this July, the VMRC, goes out and looks at what you're catching and gets in touch with households to figure out what your effort is to come up with these landings estimates, which we'll be doing this July. Despite that, January and February have always been off limits. I've listened for 10 years for complaints from complainers about the fact that Virginia does not have any accounting of what's called Wave 1, January and February. Some of you may know January and February can be a very good fishery. What you should also know is we try and make some attempt to estimate based on a
a little relationship about tags and fish and what North Carolina does and everything else, but we don't think we have a very good estimate. One concern I have is if Virginia's going to be aggressive, then with striped bass in the shape they are, which I think is okay, it's okay. I mean, they're not overfished, right? The fishing mortality has been where it shouldn't be, and that's what is asked to be brought down to the target. We're not overfished, but if they ran the data, maybe we are. That's what got the ASMFC behind us, the fact that when they ran these projections, where they take the data and they assume that recruitment's going to be a certain amount for the next few years, they look at what the spawning stock biomass will be, and it showed that it dipped below the threshold. That's what set this whole situation in motion. So I would hate to think, and this may never happen, but I would hate to think someone gets the brilliant idea, you know what, North Carolina, they go out and they take care of wave one. They sample wave one, they get the effort and everything else. Why doesn't Virginia do that? Now, I don't know what the cost is, but the National Marine Fisheries Service hasn't wanted to do it. That tells you something. The second thing is they may say, why should there be a fishery in January and February? So any kind of two-fish limit also comes around next January and February. That might be problematic. The other situation we have here is with these slots, and Joe covered it pretty much, we can debate all day which is going to be the most conservative, which will have the most high grading, you know, which will take care of what. But you know, you have to think that if the ASMFC said there needs to be a reduction, when they come back with the assessment, I hope they find a reduction. If they don't find a reduction, I think it gives us some ability. I don't know how it will turn out, but it gives us some ability to say, you know what, we were conservative. Cut us some slack. Now, if you think that's infeasible, you have to realize that we got a 20.5% reduction for the bay instead of 25. So it's not infeasible. Those are the concerns that I have. I'll be expressing them to the commission. I have a concern that it took 1, 2, 3 attempts by the committee to really have something just to pass on. So I'm going to tell you, I don't think it's a real strong option. We only have a handful of letters right now. I expect there will be more. I expect the clubs will weigh in. They should weigh in. I'm not sure what happened, but the clubs had not gotten back to Lewis as of the 5th of March. But I know I was at the Virginia Beach Anglers Club on Saturday, and I sensed there was some surprise that they could come in and tell us what they wanted. So there'll probably be more input coming in. I don't know where it'll end up. I do understand the charter aspect. I really do understand that. But I also understand that, you know, these are pretty tough times. And even if we think the MRIT data is not there yet, I mean, I won't say it's bad. I'll say it's not there yet because they're still working on it. Even if it's not there, the trend shows that things have been pretty abysmal in our coastal fishery for the last 4 years. And MRIP now goes back to 2004, if I'm not mistaken. Or do they go back earlier? When they redid the data approach. I think at least 2004. So if you look at that data, it is like that. So I have some concerns here. You know, if the commission feels that it doesn't want to be conservative, that's going to be something the commission has to decide. But I think it's worthwhile for me to tell you, you know, what staff really is thinking about it. So thank you for the time.
I would have preferred to have heard that before we voted, actually, to tell you the truth. That's all right.
I didn't know how to do that because typically staff is in alignment with the committee, right?
Well, when we're not, I'd like to hear it so that we know and why. So you think that by next year or sometime they may start counting January and February?
I don't think they'll start counting because it, I don't think they'll start counting because it falls on us to count.
Well,
we're inheriting this program in July.
Are they going to demand that we count January and February?
They can't if they don't give us the money. But they can do other things. And I just leave it as sort of suggestion. What would you do if the Rockfish were under this reduction situation for a few years and you're making your cuts and you know that Virginia's sitting there with what is reported to be a fantastic January-February fishery, which I don't believe. I think some years it's fantastic, other years it's not. The big tournament caught zero fish 2 years up until this year, in my understanding. So, I mean, it's not always terrific. So.
My, from what I hear from the commercial guys, the fish were there, they were just outside the three-mile limit. So the fish are still here. It's not that the stock is in dire straits, as you said, it's not. My personal opinion is it's reached carrying capacity, and we're not going to be able to contain it at the high level everybody saw and wants to get comfortable with. But
your classes have to be counted for.
Right.
In 2011, that's the only dynamite year class since 2005 from the Chesapeake.
Okay.
Question I have for Rob before he sits down. Now you've got your creaky old bones back up. If this is a what if question. Now, if we would start tracking data for January and February, that's going to be plugged in. So all of a sudden we went from no fishery to some fish mortality rate. Because of that, are they going to take in consideration, should they, I think they should, shouldn't they take in consideration that the fishery may have been the same, static the whole time, and the only difference is now we're retrieving information before we weren't? Or is this going to show up as additional mortality, even though it's the same mortality that's always been there?
Well, it probably is additional mortality, but I don't know what you do about the past. The example that really bothers me about wave one, January, February, is what happened at the Mid-Atlantic Council. Because there was a January and February black sea bass fishery in 2013. And there had been one in the past for years and years and years. And all of a sudden, the Mid-Atlantic Council decided that the enforcement wasn't good enough. No one was at the dock enough. They decided that the accountability of what was being caught wasn't good enough. And frankly, I thought it was all a response to what happened with the RSA, the Research Set-Aside Program, that there was a reaction to that, and that really influenced closing the black sea bass fishery, because the argument I made was, if you remember what was said, was, well, look, we've got to be fair. And if it's just going to be the party charter that gets out in wave one, what about the anglers? Some anglers that want to go out there. And I said, well, fair, let's look at the data. The party charter used to be 60-some percent of that fishery up until 5, 6, 7 years ago. So what's really fair about this? But you talk about deaf ears. That day was deaf ears time. So they close it. There's no chance to even open it. It takes a year and a third to have something open up through the federal system. You'd have to be a year and a third in advance. So, and this really impacted, not a ton of charter party, but definitely during the winter time, it makes a big deal. So that's why I brought up the fact that here we are sitting on what some may perceive a little gold mine in January and February, and why shouldn't we? And I'm just thinking ahead a little bit. That's all I'm doing. All this plays into the reasons why I think we stay where we are. Okay?
I just wanted to add to the comment that you said before you said it, that, you know, I don't want it to be misleading that these last few years that the fish in the ocean are not here. They're just not inside 3 miles, especially not this winter, but last winter. I know they tagged hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fish. You know, they're all 12, 15 miles offshore. But it's not that they're not here. They're just not inside 3 miles.
Would anybody like to revisit a recommendation? Okay, I take it that's a no. Next subject.
I think what the committee did is fine. It just shows the uncertainty.
All right.
The other items for striped bass. One is Chesapeake Bay fishery. You remember the one option that was went forward and was approved by SMSC Management Board was to raise our minimum size limit of recreational fishery from 18 to 20 inches. This would achieve our 20.5% reduction from 2012 harvest. The board, both the TC and the board have blessed this option as one that we can move forward with. So that is our sole option for the Chesapeake Bay fishery in general. And then also, we have the option to raise the Chesapeake Bay Coastal and Potomac River Tributary Spring Trophy recreational season size limit from 32 to 36 inches. Remember when we talked about this in the past, that trophy fishery is actually linked to the coastal fishery because it is on the spring migrants. So that fishery actually has to achieve a 25% reduction, even though it's happening in the bay. They approved this plan jointly. Virginia can take this option, as can Maryland, as can the Potomac River Fisheries Commission. We know the other two jurisdictions have this as one of their options as well to look at this spring. But this works well for us, goes and keeps us in place. Plus, you'll remember we have a new recreational trophy striped bass permit, no-cost permit, that goes into effect this year, to both identify those who are participating in that trophy fishery and be able to reach out to them directly with the reporting form so we can actually get a better estimate of what is being taken during the trophy season. And the mandatory reporting, though it's been more volunteer and more volunteer if actually if they're going to pick up the paper or not. So we're going to send them the paper this time and have them tell us, did you fish or not, and if you did, what'd you catch? If you didn't fish, tell us that as well. So that's already in place. Once we get through these options next week, we're going to highlight this on the commission website and a few other places. You'll actually be able to get the trophy permit online through our own website. Since it's a no-cost permit, we're setting it up so you can just do it right from home. You don't even have to go to an MRC agent for this particular permit. But these are straightforward options. There's no deviation from this. There isn't four separate things to talk about here. It's just the one option for the Chesapeake Bay, raising the minimum size limit, and the one option on the trophy fishery, again, raising the size limit 32 to 36.
Do you need a vote from us to support it?
Of course, it would be welcome.
Okay. Any comments from the committee?
I have a comment.
Okay.
On the permit issue, is it going to be set up so you have to get the permit like the day before, or can you be on the water with your smartphone and say, we've got a big one, get a permit? Something to think about.
Okay, so ideally you will have your permit before you go out, as it's a no-cost permit, but I could see a situation where someone catches one, and if law enforcement isn't there, they remember, oh, I'm supposed to have a permit, and they'll go to our website and apply for it right then and there. Yes, that is definitely possible, Tom.
On
your
iPhone or what?
If you can access our website on the smartphone, you could do it. So
you got to print it?
You should have it printed out. You should have it printed out, but I'll have to pose that question to law enforcement and see how they're going to interpret you holding up your smartphone with your permit on it.
Do you have a pro or con for that, Tom, one way or the other?
No, it's just a thing to think about.
Thank you.
I think there's going to be a lot of problems with communicating to the public that you have to get a permit in advance.
Well, there may be, but I know between the website, Facebook page, and everything, Laurie Naismith is planning on blasting this out there, so we're hopeful we'll get it out to a lot of people. And we've already sent a notice out to all the clubs about this as well, along the same time we notified them about these options.
All right, and it will be on the card for the regulations for striped bass.
But I can tell you that all the stations that sell license have no clue that this is coming down the road.
It's already there. But
most of the places that sell license have no knowledge whatsoever about the
strike. But hold on, David. Are you talking game department license agents or MRC license agents? There is a difference.
But the several I've talked to that sell freshwater and saltwater fishing license and hunting license, I guess they're using DGIF sites.
Okay, this is not a DGIF license.
Right,
permit.
But none of those dealers are even aware.
Well, again, let me finish.
So they can tell people.
David, if they're not an MRC agent, they wouldn't be aware. Okay? You can only get this through our website and through the Marine Resource Commission licensed agents. That's it. And we're tying into that, and I see the hand up behind me. So let me finish. We are going to tie into this. No comment. So we are working at tying in the tilefish grouper vessel permit into the same system, so those can do that. They can get that from home as well, and not have to go to an MRC agent, which has been a bit of an issue lately, as we've lost a few in places like Pocosin.
Okay.
So with that,
I have a question for all our technical people out there. The whole purpose of having this permit, which started in 1995, has been under mandatory reporting since 1995, and has had terrible reporting since 1995. The whole reason that we're going this route is to really know what the count of these trophy fish are, because we just have no idea. We know it's not big. We know that a lot of anglers say, why bother? And we know when we put it in place, there was a lot of people who just said, who needs it? You know, it's not like Maryland spring fishing. But are we going to have an ID of everyone who gets a trophy permit? Or are these going to be so available that we don't know who has the permit? And if we don't know who has the permit, how are we going to audit them to say, hey, you got a permit, you have to report either no catch or give us your information? So are we going to know?
No, we'll have.
Well, that brings up
another
question.
We'll have the contact information on every single person.
No matter how they come in here.
Mm-hmm. Every single person will have that information.
I'm thinking about that, I'm not sure. So if we have the information, there's a follow-up to this. If we have the information, we can contact them. We can finally get a count of the frozen fish. If we don't get reports, then you don't get a permit next year. So we've already checked that out. The regulation states if you really don't comply, not just with this permit, but with any type of permit, then you're ineligible for the next year. So I think we need to. You kind of got that word around or not?
Yeah, we sent it out with the club notes.
So we need to have that word around because we don't want people by surprise.
Well, then it also will need to be published on the rockfish cards that y'all distribute also.
The what?
About the new license? No, I don't think.
The permit is on there. Look at it.
Well, I haven't looked at it yet this year. It's on there now.
I think this is a good event. You know, if we go forward, we can say here's what our trophy catch is. If you knew how we did it now, we assume that whatever we get is 42% of what we really have, and the 42% comes from the day that we actually gave out 43,000 permits and had all the staff writing out permits, and we had a 42% compliance rate. So we're in the dark ages, and Joe and others are going to help us move ahead, and I'm happy about that.
Going back to what Tom said, maybe it's not a bad idea. Then, if the whole idea is to get people to report and get the permits, to allow that on a smartphone, you know, if somebody's out, you know, why not?
It'll probably be allowable, but I can't speak for law enforcement how they're going to interpret it in the end of the day.
Right, because we don't want people, if they accidentally catch one, they don't have a permit, sneaking it in.
If
they know,
right. Emails to the individual and they're using their smartphone, they can show the email
Right, if they're able to do that, I think it's going to encourage more people.
Again, I just don't want to speak for that division. We can assume a lot.
I also think there does need to be a big outreach program to the coastal, the locations that sell saltwater fishing licenses, that's for the DCIS locations, that are in the coastal county.
Okay.
So when you send out a poster put up in the spring season that says, you're
going to
do this, you need a permit.
Thank you, Tom. Anything else on Rockfish?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm looking at Lewis's card, and it just says trophy size permit and catch report required. This probably will have to be expanded so people know exactly where they go to get the permits. Because right now, I know they're coming in some of the license places, and nobody knows where to tell them to go get them or whatever. They all come in and look for those cards, and that's where they're going to look. And if the instructions are not there to tell them where to go get them.
And again, as I stated already before, and I'll state it again because you probably missed it.
I understand.
Laurie Naismith,
those
next
cards
week.
Are not giving enough information to the anglers.
You got that point, David. I understand that point very well.
Right.
And, okay, that's why we're going to do the extra efforts next week once we get past the commission meeting. I mean, I can't do anything more. I can't print anything on your card for you right now.
All right.
Okay. We got the point.
It's a good point. Thanks.
Very
Dave.
Good point.
Yes, it is.
You're going to endorse this?
Anybody in the committee that's here have any opposition to those? Anything we want to pass on? Seeing no opposition, yes, they're endorsed.
By consensus. The last item for y'all tonight is this has come up through various issues involving the law enforcement division. This is a request of the division that we've been working on. Back in December of 2007, when we were doing some work in the regulation involving possession of striped bass, commercial striped bass tags in the bay from other jurisdictions, we were having situations as far down as James River. We find vessels with Potomac River tag fish. There was some additional language added to the regulation that prohibited that. You really should only be possessing Virginia tags in Virginia in a vessel in Virginia waters. But up in the northwestern part of the bay, west of Tangier Island over the Great Wicomico River, we do have a situation where individuals up there have Virginia commercial quota, Potomac River tags, and also have Maryland tags in a couple instances. And they were landing them in the Great Wicomico River area or at Tangier. So this initial area was created giving them the ability to possess those tags in this area, and that they actually, the way it was loosely written, it allowed them to have all three on board at the time. And over time, lessons learned since 2007, one thing is along the line here, since Virginia and Maryland don't always have the same regulations and size limits commercially, if you catch one on one side of the water and you have tags for both, but it's legal on the other side, to slip across the line, tag it, and then slip back. We've had that situation up here. We also had a situation here entering Great Wicomico River where they traverse from coming down to get into Great Wicomico, but to get into Great Wicomico, you got to go into the area that's not covered by the exception. You got to go a little far south from Fleeton Point to turn into Great Wicomico. So this little area here is in the little circle. That area, they were traversing through. Technically, they were illegal when they went through that area. In working with law enforcement, what we've done is kind of cleaned this up a bit. One thing that we've done is we have proposed for the commission to expand the area slightly. So instead of it boxing off here at Fleeton Point, we're expanding the area to include all the Great Wicomico River's mouth across Ingram's Bay. This way they can traverse legally into the Great Wicomico River for landing without having issues there. The other issue is that to separate the trips. This is actually something Maryland already requires, and that if you're fishing in these areas, if you're out doing your Virginia tags, only your Virginia tags should be on board. If you're going to go do Potomac or Maryland, you should only have those on board. And you should not, for any reason, stop in Virginia waters when you have a Potomac or Maryland tags on board and fish Virginia gear. This will help take care of some very large law enforcement concerns in the area about cheating the line. It will definitely help enforcement, and while still allowing the harvesters, especially those based here in the Great Wicomico River, the ability to go out and get Maryland or get their Potomac fish that they have quota for and come back in. So this is, again, this summit. It started in December of 07 at a commission meeting. It wasn't even part of an evaluation. It happened on the fly here at the podium after public comment. And this is to clean up that initial provision back in 2007. And this is just some of the language that's being added in. But we're basically, it's redefined the area to include the additional area. It's just making it unlawful for you to have more than one jurisdictional set of tags on board or tagged fish on board. That has to be either Virginia, Maryland, or Potomac River if you have those things. You can't have them in combination. You can't fish that gear if the other two jurisdiction tags are on board. So, again, this is a law enforcement item. I'm making you aware of it. It's a fairly minor tweak in the end of the day, but it looks a little bit more menacing than it is.
Okay. Didn't Potomac River Fisheries pass something similar to this last week where you're only allowed to have Potomac River tags in the Potomac River?
I'm not aware. I didn't get a briefing back on that meeting.
I think they did.
But we've all been having this discussion, so I wouldn't be surprised that Marty put this through.
Okay. Thank you very much for the update. Any questions from the committee? Question from Rob.
Information. One other item is, how cold has the winter been? Boy, it's really been cold and wet, by the way. If you live in Gloucester, you don't want to live in Gloucester right now.
It was nice where I was.
But we were contacted by, Andy was actually contacted initially by several commercial harvesters that requested a delay as to when the slot limit that we have. From March 26th through June 15th, we have an 18 to 28-inch slot in the Chesapeake Bay and Trips. That started in 1996. It used to be March 15th. Initially, in 1995, the Potomac River jurisdiction asked to go to March 26th, and we followed suit. So that's the time of year when you can only have 18 to 28 fish. This isn't really relevant, but you should probably know in the early years, I tracked the harvest pretty closely through our sampling program, and adherence to that slot was so-so. It wasn't terrible, but it was not like it was in recent years. In recent years, it's been tightened up. There really aren't any overages to speak of any big amount. So the slot is effective. Doug Jenkins called me. He was another caller. And I told him, I said, look, I will call the ASMFC. Don't hold out hope because, you know, we're right in the middle of all this striped bass reductions and everything else. But I did call the ASMFC, talked to them. The request was for 2 weeks, a delay for 2 weeks. After talking to Tony Kearns at the ASMFC, who's the coordinator of all the management species, it was 1 week. And I said, okay, 1 week is good, but I'd like you to send this information out to the management board and see if they have any heartburn with it. And it's been out there now for a week and a half. We've gotten five responses, all positive, all saying things such as, we understand some of our fisheries are going to have to be extended, not striped bass. One was scallops, bay scallops, and some other things. So at the commission meeting, staff will be requesting an emergency regulation to delay the normal March 26th start of this slot until April 2nd, a week. Now, along with that, we've got mesh regulations for gillnet to try and correspond to all of that. And I think at that time of the year, you can't fish between 3 3/4 and 6. We'd move that to April. Whatever the mesh regulations are, we'll move that to April 2nd as well. What I pointed out to Tony Kearns was that despite this and the fact that we have a week, you know, delay in imposition of the slot limit, we always have had, since the 80s, the spawning grounds prohibition. So from April 1 through May 31st, there's been that prohibition that you really can't harvest in the spawning grounds. You could set a drift net, but you have to release the rockfish. So I wanted to inform you of this, and, you know, maybe it's something that the ASMFC won't have to face too much, because this is the first time I remember it coming up. I remember some really bad winters. 1989 really sticks out in my mind. But, you know, I think this is a good event. Andy has looked at the data. After I did the letter and went with Tony, Andy looked at what the data are, because the fishermen were saying, you know, we can't catch our quota the way we usually do. And I want to say they were well off. What was it, like 58,000 pounds?
Yeah, versus what's normally about 150,000 base points.
So about one-third of the amount of quota that's been able to be taken, especially by your upriver fishermen, has been taken now. So there's definitely, you know, a need to have this week.
We did the same thing with oysters, or you did, didn't you?
Oysters, the commission did.
Okay.
They extended it. Actually, they extended it through March 13th, I think it was. They gave a full 10 working days.
Okay. All right. Any questions from the committee? All right. Yes, Doug.
This area that and Joe left off here, our question is, does that include the tributaries of the Tunnel or just below the...
That area, it does not include tributaries of the Tunnel that's in that map, though. Like, mm-hmm. Little Comca River is not in that area.
And Nomina and Joe... I'm not in that area that you're proposing this northwest.
Well, it's not in. I mean, but it already exists. It already exists. And you don't mind me going back on the item?
No, not at all.
So this area here. All we're doing is we're expanding the area, and we're separating out the trips. And the way language is here, one is, you know, in this particular area that we're talking about, it's unlawful for any person aboard any vessel to possess more than one jurisdiction tags, or more than one jurisdiction tag striped bass in the Great Wacoma Code, Tangier Striped Bass Management Area. So, again, that's what we're separating out in this area. As far as the other area goes that Doug's talking about, that has to do with the Potomac River. And the Potomac River, it's unlawful. Let me get the right line here for you. It's unlawful to possess Potomac River Fisheries Commission striped bass tags in Virginia waters except when transiting the Virginia tributaries of the Potomac River to land in Virginia and as provided in the new section, being the new Great Wacoma Code Tangier area, the modified area. So you can still transit the Potomac tribs with Potomac tags. You have to.
Right.
You can't land any fish from the Potomac unless you come into Virginia or you go into Maryland. That's just how it works.
Some of these inspectors don't come home. I mean, I know guys up there. They fish in Potomac, but yet they have nets in Virginia too. And when they go to fish, you know, they have both
set of
tags.
Well, as what Wayne just said, sounds like in Potomac you can't have both set of tags.
No, I don't think you can have Virginia tags in a Potomac River now.
Yeah, they're having the same problem up there with people crossing the line.
Right. So they changed that last week.
I think so.
We have different size limits, and it's a way to cheat the system with some individuals. You wouldn't do it, Doug. there's other individuals who would cheat the system up there, and that's what law enforcement is dealing with.
Is that clear, Doug?
Not quite,
because I don't know what
that's
like. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you can't have anything over 36 inches in the Potomac River after February 15th.
Right. Okay. Set it for rockfish. Speckled trout? Summarize for us what we're going to cover under this topic today, please.
Well, I'm going to try and cover what's on the agenda. So I'll, what I plan to do is go through an update, because we gave you guys a preview of what the stock assessment said.
Right.
So I'm going to give an update on that, and then give some information on what happened at the commission meeting from AFMAC's last recommendation. I'm prepared to answer questions on anything else that comes up, but that's what I intend to go through.
Okay. Did you count on this being a mini public hearing or anything along those lines? Rob, was there discussion about having a separate meeting dedicated to speckled trout where everybody could voice their opinion?
I think we had a couple of those, don't you?
Yeah, we've had them, but couldn't get everybody on the same side at the same time.
Here's the chain of events that I know them, and some of you have been involved in this as well, so I'm not alone. After the poaching incident in the Elizabeth River, I received, on that Sunday following, I started to receive emails with lots of advice about what should happen and all sorts of suggestions about the poaching. If you don't know about the poaching, I think it was 3,200 pounds of speckled trout altogether. Does that sound right?
No, 2,500 is about 460.
Okay, 2,500. And so, we had that situation. That was soon transcended within short order by the cold stun. Another flurry of emails about what should be done. And the ideas have ranged from close the spawning season, get the gill nets out of the Elizabeth River, do a stock assessment every year, and I think by now some of you know that a stock assessment is something that doesn't work that way, especially with BMRC. We don't have stock assessment scientists who are working as stock assessment scientists anymore. So it really was getting kind of carried away, and within that were sort of misgivings. Did you mention that at all? Because I was talking to Joe for a minute. Misgivings about the commission meeting. Did you mention that?
Not yet.
Okay. So misgivings about the commission meeting, where the commission had three choices at the February 24th meeting. They could take your items that you propose, and I can recount them if you want me to, but I think we know them. Take those to a public hearing to be held March 24th. Or they could look at this bycatch situation, the commercial bycatch, because that needed to be cleaned up. And, that was something that they were using and complaining about. And you voted to get rid of the idea of bycatch and go to 150-pound trip limit once 80% had been caught and all that. And the third item was take no action. So Dr. Neal proposed option two. He proposed, let's work on the bycatch. No one seconded the motion on the commission. It was the quietest moment in the history of the commission. It was almost as if they were all saying, I'm invisible. It really was odd for me.
Okay.
So then finally, Dr. Neal came back and said, well, okay, option three, no action. And everyone went, okay, that's what they did. So that generated some emails as well that, why did that happen? We should have had a public hearing. We should have had a chance to hear all this out. So we have all that going on. My suggestion at this point, after all the emails I've seen, is that we do need to have some heckler trout event. But you, as the chair, I think should be the one to coordinate that. Typically what happens with special meetings or subcommittee meetings, there may be folks on FMAC who really don't want to participate in speckled trout issues. That can happen.
Okay.
If that's the case, you find out who does, and then also you try to get someone who's been interested and reasonable and have them help out with the process. You try to have about 12 people, which is not a magic number, but for those type of deliberations, you know, that's what you might need, and then you have an audience that they could also, at your direction, give comments. We've gone through this many different times. The most recent was a crab dredge study committee where we had, you know, probably about 10 or 11 folks around the table and some in the audience, and some in the audience helped out quite a bit, and they had their turn. So I really think it's up to you and the committee to decide how this goes, because you know in the past when the commission gets in a situation where they know there's polarization, they always say, send it back to FMAC and let them work it out. So I wouldn't take away anyone's abilities. I'm just saying it may be that some of you don't really want to participate, you know, then we would have a special meeting. It wouldn't be held at FMAC. If, on the other hand, you'd like to have it at FMAC and bring others in, it may be confusing.
I'd like to have it as a separate meeting on a separate day.
You have maintained the first step. All right.
Thank you, Dad.
All right.
And what do I do about arranging for your folks to educate us?
We'll be here. I have some standing knowledge. Mr. Joe Cimino has participated in the assessment process. He probably has the leading edge right now, is what I would say. The rest of us have information and knowledge, but haven't been right in the middle of it. So Joe's been down to North Carolina. Joe's been on the phone when they did the last peer review session about a week ago, right? So that's something a lot of the folks have been misunderstanding, the stock assessment, because we have a stock assessment now. And despite the fact that maybe you want to fill everyone in on the high points of the stock assessment, because despite all that, people are still unhappy.
Okay.
And Joe has some updates.
All right. Yeah, let's start at this end.
If we're going to have a subcommittee and we're going to put it together and let them discuss this in depth, we've heard a little bit about the stock status a couple times already, and I guess there's some updates, but we could probably move things along and save all of that for that subcommittee to deal with.
What do you think, Joe? Is there much to cover here today? If I guess it depends on how soon we're going to put this together and how much trouble we'll have. How long do you think your presentation will take?
There's about four slides. I mean, and the update is that, you know, the assessment was approved. They were fortunate enough to get some experts, I would call them, from Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, people that worked on the stock assessments in those places, people that worked on the fishery management plans in those places and have been there for quite a few years, that were able to review this assessment. And, you know, this is a much different assessment than what they cobbled together in 2009, if you will. I think this is comparable to anything that ASMFC has done, except ASMFC hasn't been interested in touching this because it doesn't have that interjurisdictional management issue.
Okay.
You know? So the stock status is that it's not overfished. Overfishing isn't occurring. The spawning stock biomass is nearly double the target, which is, you know, where you want to be as a good place. I was telling some staff members, I looked at other ASMFC managed species, with the exception of scup, there isn't another managed species that biomass is in this good of a place. So
Okay. Let me go back to the committee here for a few seconds. Beth?
I just would like to get some clarification because I've had multiple people come up to me. I've seen various emails that are indicating that this stock assessment is mostly North Carolina and Virginia's not really in it. Can you please clarify about that Virginia? Can you just make a statement on that, please?
Yeah. I mean, that was the case for, again, what they put together in 2009. This assessment, the contribution of Virginia to the data isn't any different than it is for Black Drum, for Cobia, for Red Drum. Which
so this is Virginia data?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
It goes from 1991 through 2012. We do have some 2013.
Do you also have some 2013 data, though?
Did some updates. Part of this, just to ground truth, the actual model, which is one of the most complicated models used on the coast, they've done some simpler things, including catch curves, which some of you have heard about, and even that's been updated, including Virginia catch curves, updated through 2013.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. And from the other talk that you did at the Anglers Club, if I remember correctly, you said that it doesn't take very long to get the 2013 and 2014 data because they're already accumulating it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Instead of picking them apart one question at a time, why don't you do your presentation and we'll address anything that you have left.
Yeah. I really don't have a lot much more to say but I was speaking very quickly there. So this assessment really is comparable to what has been done for ASMFC species, you know, for those assessments. What it doesn't have is any Virginia-specific fishery-independent data or any juvenile indices. But again, that is true for many species that we manage. For the spawning stock biomass, is double the target. Has never come anywhere near the threshold, which would be the true danger zone for the spawning stock biomass. This was a slide that I have in there. You know, what's circled is documented winter kills. You know, which were considered significant mortality events. This is a big part of this assessment. Is trying to quantify natural mortality spikes. So that's why they went with one of the most complicated models out there right now. and what you see is that the stock in the past has rebounded from some of these mortality events. They do seem to have an impact. There was a group of years where these mortality events hit. It did seem to impact the stock a little bit. During that time period, North Carolina took absolutely no action, put no regulations in place, and the stock just continued to climb and rebound on its own there. North Carolina started putting management measures in place in 2009 and have tightened them in 2011. Fishing mortality got close to the target in the most recent year. The assessment, not necessarily a bad thing. Here, that threshold level, being below that threshold, that dotted line up top, is the danger zone. So those are the two most important slides, I think, for the assessment. And after that, we just got some other info for you. So.
Trying to think of a way to explain this to Tom, but I don't.
Well, Tom has these slides, actually.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Right before the meeting. So.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
Or a comment, actually, another question.
Yes.
The one thing that I would really like when we move forward on this is for staff to explore the quality of the fishery, not just that we are the stock is exploited to a level or not of abundance considered too low to ensure safe reproduction, or that harvesting of the stock is at a rate greater than the stock's reproduction capacity. Because I believe that this fishery should be managed as primarily a recreational fishery, and we should be managing it as a quality fishery and not just how many small fish are you catching? Because these fish will reproduce at year one when they're still small, and that's why it's really hard or why it's really easy to have a safe reproduction level and still have a truncated stock.
Okay, well.
In the recent years, when we had several years of good mild winters, we had good distribution of large eggs, of larger fish. And I think that that is something we should try to be pushing for with this fishery, or at least not risking as we set up any changes to the regulations.
All right, thank you. Anyone else on the committee have any questions or comments?
Yes. I want to follow up on one of Beth's comments, which is the quicker we can see something about 213 and 214, the better off everything will be, because I can see where if you're creeping towards the target and just about hit it in 2012, even though a target is a management construct, there'll be many that will worry about that. So it'd be nice to see how things were in 2013, 2014, when we had a pretty sizable cold stone in one year and somewhat of a cold stone in the other year. Carolina seems to be the same way from what we found out. You know, they searched for five counties, as Joe mentioned before, to see if you know, what the stone is before they do close in their own. So, you know, one thing is all the, if we can remove as much controversy as we can with the data, then the more expedient this whole process will be, I would suggest. So,
when do you expect to have that data?
Joe has to tell us.
Well, yeah, not that we would necessarily be updating the model entirely, but I think part of that creeping up, that 2012 bump in fishing mortality, was both North Carolina and Virginia did see, you know, an unprecedented number of speckled trout and red drum move through, juveniles move through in 2011. This fish grows so fast that they recruited into the fishery. They were of legal harvest in that following year. I think that exceptional year class is what moved that 2012 fishing mortality rate so high. The fish were just everywhere. And again, where the more minor component of the harvest for both commercial and recreational, North Carolina does dominate the catch. They clamped down in 2011. They changed their regs. So I think that should play into lowering fishing mortality too. So I think that spike was really just a year class spike.
And the 13 and 14 data you'll have?
Yeah. We have the 13 landings. North Carolina has all the fisheries independent stuff for 2013. So some of that's already been updated. As 2014 data gets finalized, they can update some of it. They don't intend to keep updating the stock assessment necessarily, but a lot of the information that goes into it will be known.
Okay, we want to have this meeting as soon as possible, but we want as much current information as possible. So how far out are we looking?
We're getting close on final commercial. I don't know when wave six would be considered final for.
That's usually May, probably. It's final.
It's final. It's available.
Yeah, it's available now, but. No, the aging isn't, but I mean we've got the sample sizes from 24. You know what I mean? We have the lengths from 24. No. In May, most of this should be. Available.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Is that it, Joe?
Yeah, since we actually started with the first part of that agenda item, which was the commission decision.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We'll get back to that.
Blue line tilefish.
For
gamut of fish today.
For everyone's notice, the hour hand on that clock is not moving.
Let's say you were running a very efficient meeting according to that clock.
Yeah.
All right. Blue on tilefish. This is pretty much just going to be a briefing of where we are and where we're going. At least we think we're going. Back in on February 25th, there was a webinar by the Mid-Atlantic Council pertaining to blue-lawn tilefish. And this had been building up because, as some of you may or may not know, there, even though Virginia and Maryland have fairly similar regulations involving blue-lawn tilefish, our seven fish possession limit recreationally and our 300-pound trip limit for the commercial, states north of Maryland do not. And there has always been reports and of blue-lawn tilefish being landed Delaware, New Jersey, from some of the head boats, and some of those boats had been seen as far south as Washington Canyon. You never heard a report of one of our boats seeing a New Jersey boat down in Norfolk Canyon. You'll remember what we went through. Some of you remember what we went through back in 06 and 07 when we had this issue before the committee for many meetings and eventually before the commission, and it was the fact we had boats down here deck loading in the recreational side. And actually had commercial industry coming before you asking for us to put regulations in place on this fishery to curtail it, knowing how fish it can be depleted. And we also knew from the South Atlantic's management strategy and their success or lack of success that they have overfished their fishery at that point, and it continues to be very dramatically overfished, overfishing is occurring. So here we are in 2015. And as they were looking at the information for the past couple of years, they started seeing landings of blue-lawn tilefish in the Mid-Atlantic go up, where it was just a couple thousand and it ended up being over 200,000 pounds to our north. It started to become very concerning when just to our south, it's under a situation where recreationally in the South Atlantic, they're going to be going to one blue-lawn tilefish per vessel. Pretty big difference versus what we have in place. And since the South Atlantic Management Council has jurisdiction over this fish, they have the ability to consider their jurisdiction northward if they talk, if they get that approval from the National Marine Fisheries Service. And their most recent stock assessment, which does include Virginia data, does show an overfished, overfishing condition. It is primarily South Atlantic data in there, but there is Virginia data incorporated. A lot of things have been building up. Mid-Atlantic Council has been talking about this over the last year. They had a very good update last December with a white paper and then another update, and then this webinar came about in February. And what basically what the Mid-Atlantic is doing is trying now to be do what we did back in 07 is get ahead of this. Because the other thing you may remember from the South Atlantic back in 07 and 08, there was talk at that time of expanding their management unit, which would pretty much have ended our blue-lawn tilefish fishery completely with the depth restrictions they were talking about fishing. So now the Mid-Atlantic's where we were 7-8 years ago. And they're trying to get ahead of this before something happens that virtually would shut down our fishery through tilefish. So in this meeting, long discussion, very good discussion back and forth on this webinar, but at the end of the day, what the council is requesting of the U.S. Secretary of Commerce is to implement basically an emergency measure for the Mid-Atlantic jurisdiction. This is under Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation Management Act. It's basically to curtail the risk of the depletion of the blue-lawn tilefish stock within the jurisdictional boundaries of the Mid-Atlantic Council until they can determine their own long-term management strategies for this fish. For commercial fishery, council requested the emergency or interim rules include a 300-pound possession limit hull weight in the Mid-Atlantic jurisdiction, the same as Virginia's. For the recreational tilefish fishery, they wanted a 7 fish per person established. Again, same as Virginia's. We were the poster child of who to follow in this motion. There was some discussion. There was actually included on your front page there a motion to
not do seven, maybe make it 10. They couldn't even get a second on that one. So what we have in place is what the Mid-Island Council has now gone to National Marine Fisheries Service, Secretary of Commerce, and said, please establish this as an emergency action for our waters. That's still being reviewed by National Marine Fisheries Service. In the meantime, as we tell this tale of tilefish and the soap opera that it always seems to bring, the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council met in early March. Initially, they were considering of an emergency action of their own, and their emergency action would have expanded their unit up across our waters, and that nice, lovely one fish per vessel limit would expand up here, and the commercial fishery would be all but gone. What limited commercial fishery we have for this is really a bycatch fishery. But what they have done instead, and that emergency action is still possible, what they've done is they've asked for the Mid-Atlantic Council's SSC members to meet with their SSC members in April to review the stock assessment and to talk about the results about blue line tilefish before they make a recommendation. I would not be surprised to still see the South Atlantic Council make the recommendation to expand what they have in place for management across our waters all the way up into New York. I don't know the SSC's findings will change that, but they will have an April meeting of their SSC to talk about this. In the meantime, we also are not sure if the National Marine Fisheries Service of the Secretary of Commerce is going to go ahead and implement the Mid-Atlantic Council's recommendation or not ahead of that, or if they're going to wait and see what South Atlantic wants to do and then put them both on the table side by side. So we're in a waiting game. The good thing is, for Virginia, we're already in place. If they go with what the Mid-Atlantic has proposed, we're good, we're golden, we don't have to change anything. That's what we're obviously hoping for. We've had good rapport as a state with the South Atlantic Council in the past, and I'm hopeful that maybe that will play into it as well in talking with South Atlantic staff. They were very receptive to everything we did in the preceding years that kind of curtailed them moving their management unit up here. And we're hopeful maybe we can have that type of discussion with them again to curtail it and prevent that from happening this time. But, you know, time will tell. So we wanted to update you on this because this is a very important item. Commercially, it's a bycatch fishery. Recreationally, it is a very important fishery. We do have dedicated trips for it, and plus when black sea bass is open, some of the vessels like to target both sea bass and tilefish together. So I want you to be aware of what's going on. It's a bit fluid right now, but, you know, as we get more information, we're going to pass it on to you. And, you know, we're going to kind of hope that the Mid-Atlantic Council's action is the one that's accepted, obviously. So I think, Skip, one fish per vessel would pretty much, that's it. We're done. Yeah. Who's going to go out there for that?
And just, can I add
some?
I've been at all this stuff. Like Joe said, I was on the webinar. I was at the meeting in Raleigh, and basically, it's five commercial boats out of North Carolina exploiting a loophole that are landing fish in Cape May, New Jersey, and that's what we're trying to get closed, and this is the only way. Now, in doing that, I think we've made them mad, and that's why they keep trying to do. But I can say that Commissioner Robbins is well behind us, and it's a good thing we've got him on our side.
Yeah, the council chairman is leading the charge on this one, former Commissioner Rick Robbins from here. We had very good support for this action. It carried easily, very few dissensions on this. So that was also a very good thing to say. It wasn't a close vote. It carried very well. And you had a question.
Joe, do you think that if people go to this meeting to support, that would be helpful, like if we get a couple people to go to the meeting, or do you think that would be more an interference?
I think it's the council meetings where we need to be, where your comments most important. SSC is like a technical committee.
Okay.
They don't really take too much public comment
because
they're supposed to be just looking at the technical merits of it. That's basically, you know, an SSC is a little different than a technical committee, but it's along the same lines. It's the scientific review group. So they're supposed to just look at the numbers and say what works out. And having the two go together, hopefully there'll be some good camaraderie between the two, and they'll come out with an answer we like. But that being said, as this comes up before, the South Atlantic is definitely any public comment in support of Mid-Atlantic Action, and not to have South Atlantic expand would be good. And if they open this up, it is something that would have to go under Federal Register. Any time this gets up on Federal Register, you have opportunities for public comment there. Get that public comment in there as well. I mean, one of the biggest problems we have whenever we have a council action going on is we rarely get public comment.
Mm-hmm.
We host hearings here. No one shows up but one or two.
Where is the meeting being held for the South Atlantic?
If the SSC is meeting in April, my assumption would be it's going to be in Charleston at their headquarters.
Is that something we could get up on the VMRC website, that if people are interested in commenting or showing up,
right,
for that matter?
But again, remember what I'm saying, and we can get that information out. The SSC is like a technical committee.
Yeah.
Your big issue will be to comment to the council for their public comment and commenting back to the secretary when they post this as a Federal Register. The SSC is going to be a technical review. I used to be a member of that SSC. I remember when I was there, we rarely took public comment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was supposed to be strictly a scientific review body, but we would take it occasionally. But I can tell you it didn't factor much into the decisions being made, because a lot of times the public comment was from a personal gain standpoint and not from a scientific standpoint. So it's the council and the commerce and all that. That's where the biggest bang for the buck is going to go.
Okay.
Just to say, not to deter trying to follow what the SSC does at all.
Mm-hmm.
You should follow that. That's going to be very important in everything that goes forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Also wanted to add, our limit is a combined limit of Golden's and Blue Lines. And when you get up north, the federal limit, even, you know, theoretically for here, is 8 per person. And I know Jersey is pushing hard to have not a combined. They want their 8 Golden's and their 7 Blue Lines.
Yes.
Of course, they have a lot more Golden's up there, but I do know that's what they're pushing for.
But I think, as you heard on the webinar, there's going to be a bit of pushback on that. I mean,
right,
knowing where the 10 fish option came out of and get no second,
right,
people are seeing the problems with opening it up that way. The overnight trips, to have the two-day trip limits and
yeah,
such,
yeah,
there's a lot of people concerned about. Now they recognize just how vulnerable tile fish are to overfishing. We have a perfect poster child to show us just how vulnerable it is, that they don't want to go down that path in the Mid-Atlantic.
Right.
Try and get ahead of this one. So let's hope we can.
Yeah, I think Tony DeLerno explained that years ago they overfished him in New York and got in the same situation. So.
Right. I think that was a very good webinar.
Yes, it was. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Next slide.
Summer Flounder.
Rob's out of the room. I'll just cover this very briefly. We just put this on here just to give a recreational commercial fishery update. A recreational, and we're not changing.
All right, let me interrupt you for a minute. Rob's coming back. Were there any questions from the audience on blue line tilefish? Yes, sir. Mike?
Add to what's been discussed. You cannot compare fishing in southern Florida for blue line tilefish, where an angler has to travel 8 miles, 12 miles maybe, so every 16-foot boat and above can go out and fish for blue line tilefish, in our fishery here in Virginia, where we got to go 65, 70 miles to go. So the pressure that we have on our fishery is nowhere near what the southern Florida fisheries are. They have to travel short distance, so there's a great number of boats that are fishing for blue line tilefish. I'm not saying we don't have pressure in Virginia. We do, but it's a lot less pressure. And so you can't really compare. For the South Atlantic Council to try to compare their fishery in our waters and reduce this to 1 fish per boat is ridiculous, and that would, as I mentioned, would just shut us down. And so I would recommend to the committee and to every angling club and every deep dropper in Virginia to get involved and try to stop this action. I think we have it right in Virginia. The Mid-Atlantic recommendation seems reasonable, and we should fight for that. So we should try to keep that in place as best we can. And so any cards and letters that we can do now to write to the South Council, to the Mid-Atlantic Council, to the National Marine Fisheries Service, whoever's going to make the decision, I would encourage cards and letters, you know, flood them. And I'm going to ask for all of my friends to do the same.
Okay.
And that's all I have.
Yes, we don't have a lot of homegrown pressure here, but there's guys coming up from North Carolina who have been restricted. They don't have a commercial fishery there anymore. They are the ones landing those 200,000 pounds that we see spike in the last year or so.
Well, and I certainly agree that that all the states north of us ought to have commercial limits and recreational
kind of limits.
So we're all on the same playing field, and I think that will protect our stocks.
That's what we're
for all the states to have the same limits, and that's reasonable. But we need to stop this South Council to keep us at one fish, because that would shut us down.
Yeah, some of the states can't implement them quickly, so that's why we went to the federal government to try to get jurisdiction there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, summer flounder then.
What if I walk into a summer flounder here?
You're it.
Just recreational commercial update. That's
all. Okay. Well, the recreational update is status quo. So if you remember last year, after a mighty tussle and a change in votes at the last minute, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission passed regional management. And we're lumped in with Maryland and Delaware. Delaware had a better year than Virginia. We were under our regional target, not that that really counts unless you start going over. In the coast as a whole, all the states, there was a slight overage, about 4%. But because there's no RSA, which is research set-aside program, where 3% is given for research from the flounder overall quota, because that's not being done, the RHL, recreational harvest limit, it's like a quota for the entire coast, that covered that 4%. So we're back for this next year where what I was glad about was that it's the way it was the previous year in 2014. So 2015 gives everyone a second chance to see the merits of regional management, to see whether it blows up or whether it's really something that can carry on. In Virginia, we had a public hearing. We had one attendee who's at the far end of the table right there. By the time I got to the ASMFC meeting, it was pretty clear that they're already making motions to ensure that the regional management stays there. I mean, it was written in the sand. So, you know, from here, my reservations are that Delaware was never at a 16-inch size limit that I recall. The closest they got was 2003 when they were at 16.5. They're going to have a little more power, and they showed it this last year. Maryland didn't perform any differently than they usually do by very much. We underperformed. We had our lowest season. The days of, you know, 600 to 800,000 fish, we haven't seen those for quite a while. After about 2007, and we started putting on some big size limits too, but even when we started coming down in size limits, it hasn't picked up. I don't think you can blame it all on the economy. Blame a little bit of on the economy. You could blame more on the economy back in 2008 and 2009 probably. There's a big push everyone knows about. It's right now it's asleep. It's in the minds of everyone, but there's going to be a big push for a turf war for getting commercial summer flounder. Mead knows this very well. It's an amendment. It has a lot of states to the north that feel that since the fishing grounds have moved even a little bit more further north, that there should be an opportunity for alternate landing sites. That seems to be the theme I heard maybe a couple of months ago. And that would mean if you're fishing off New Jersey, you can go in and land in New Jersey. You can go up and land in New York. You don't have to come all the way back to Virginia. That's going to be a horrendous situation when it finally comes to the climax. Right now, it seems like everyone came out early from the different states and postured, and now everyone's sort of laying back a little bit because they know that give it some more time. This is about a 2.25-year process, and we're only in probably 6 months, I guess, somewhere like there. It's going to be pretty bad, I think, to figure out how this goes. We're going to need a lot of help in Virginia. You know, we're going to need some big-time help, just like there was help for the recreational summer flounder from the governor of New York. I mean, that's what swayed a couple of votes. I mean, it's that simple. You'd like to think everything is done on biology and science and everything else, but that's not always the case, as probably some of you aren't surprised. So I'm certainly concerned. I'm keeping up alliances as I can to try and think how people are looking at this in other states. We have a situation, I don't have it off the top of my head, but we do have other licenses. We have, and you can come back to the recreational if you want. I didn't mean to jump to the commercial, but you know, there are things going on in both arenas. We have licenses from New Jersey. We have licenses from New York. We have licenses that have been bought. We have a situation where Joe Cimino can probably give you a better accounting if you want it, because he sent me the table, but we have some licenses from Massachusetts. So we haven't done anything here since 1995 as far as figuring out what type of limits there should be on the fishery. You know, off the top of my head, all we said back then was if you had 500 pounds of summer flounder landed in 1993 to 95 or something like that, then you could have a summer flounder endorsement license, which is the license that allows you to land commercially. So a lot of there's been a lot of action. Meade Amory knows probably more than I do because he hears it directly, to get licenses. Some of that may help because, you know, they, depending on how the, there's two big issues. There's a quota issue. How should the quota change, if at all? Should North Carolina and Virginia, which together have a pretty big share, 49%, of the total coastwide quota, should everyone loves to reallocate quota. You know, that's the big kick. Let's reallocate quota. Well, there's going to be some pretty good reasons that everyone can really prove. So that's one issue, quota. The second issue is what I just mentioned, the landings themselves. You know, maybe the idea that I have heard, which doesn't sound very palatable, well, you keep the quota, but you allow the boats to land elsewhere. Well, if you know anything about Virginia, we're different from some of the states in that it is our buyers, our seafood buyers, which have been the activity in our industry. In some other states, the harvesters have, the captains have more of an involvement. When we met in 1995, we met more than that. We met about six times, I think, have a system we have now. I remember only one captain, and that was Tony Pinello. He's the late Tony Pinello. He was the only captain. Everyone else was a buyer. So we have a little different situation if you start talking about changing things around. I mean, it means a lot. It means a lot to the community. There's obviously a community aspect here. There's obviously an economic aspect. The good thing, ASNFC and the Mid-Atlantic Council sort of begrudgingly at first, but have joined up in this process. That helps because there's a lot of things about the Magnuson-Stevens Reauthorization Act that don't let you just sort of give lip service to economic impacts, for example. We heard that with Strike Fast. The ASMSC is not bound by the magazine. So I think that's a good thing. I think that's in our favor. This is turf wars time. It's going to be that way. And, you know, we'll see how this goes. I mean, we have it all worked up all of a sudden on both issues. I didn't like the regional management. I still don't like the regional management for the summer flounder. I think it's a system that's about to explode. And I was quite happy when they at least said, we'll keep it the way it is, because that gives the second chance. If it can work twice, you know, maybe I have to say, maybe there's something there. But, yeah. Did you have particular questions?
Yeah, if the cold weather brings the flounder back to Virginia, like, well, it doesn't bring them back, but because they haven't they haven't really left. The population has grown up and down the coast. But if we go over this year, now that we're regional, what happens?
I've so far at the ASMSC, I've been the only person that cares about that. And I've had Sally Roman, who you've met, one of our planners, work up some strategies. I brought this up at the ASMSC. They want to have an ad hoc process when there's an overage. They don't seem interested to, since there hasn't been officially an overage yet, they don't seem interested to know preventative defense. They don't want to know what the plans could be if you go over. So what happens if you go over? Let's say two regions go over. One region goes over badly, the other region goes over somewhat. According to the way things are right now, all the states will have an ad hoc process where they'll figure out how not to punish the states that went over very much, and they'll sacrifice a little bit to smooth things out so everything will work out. It's completely unusual. I mean, it's very unusual what they're doing. I continue to look at this, and we'll have some plans. The new chair will be Mike Luisi. I don't know if from Maryland. I don't know when his chairmanship starts, but he's right now on the Demersal Committee for Mid-Atlantic. So he's from Maryland, as I said. And, you know, maybe they'll make some headway. Some people are starting to get interested, but where on earth do you just put a system into effect and not have any way to know what happens when it fails?
Well, the sad part is our quota, so to speak, is our lowest year we've ever had. That's where they came from, got the numbers from.
Yeah, we helped.
And we didn't keep up even with that last year, so it was off. But if we go back to even a half normal year, it's going to hit the fan,
right.
And we don't know what's going to happen.
As I mentioned earlier, and we all have trepidation here, we send sympathy cards. We are taking on MRIP. We're going to be doing MRIP. The trial balloon starts in July. That alone, with all the states doing MRIP instead of just six of them, that will change things too. So there's a lot that I wish you hadn't brought up the word summer flounder. Right?
It's on the agenda. That's all I can tell you. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
On the commercial side of summer flounder, we've been very fortunate. Staff's worked well with us in managing our quota and how we manage it. We have had a few hiccups in the last year, and there's nobody here from the commercial summer flounder fishery. It's hard to get them here, as you've seen in the past. I mean, they're always out fishing. As soon as summer flounder fishing's over, they're doing something else. But if we could, you're going to have a subcommittee on speckled trout. If we could try to get some of the commercial summer flounder folks together at a different time and discuss some of the issues with staff, we have talked with staff about better ways to do a real-time management without emergency measures or something, because it changes so quickly, the way some states open and close, and this 85% trigger we've had an issue with this last year. And we don't need to tie up this whole committee's time with this, but it could be addressed with a subcommittee of just that fishery and those people, if that's something we could do.
I don't have a problem with that.
We do have issues with, you know, a lot of latent permits and a lot of new boats entering the fishery from other states, and that could be brought up and discussed. I don't know if anything will come of it, but at least we can be brought up to speed.
Well, it's been 20 years, so since I remember all the meetings over there, we should do it. You know, I think we'll, at first, we're going to be a little lagging behind depending on when we start. We have blue crab issues about to hit us in April and May. And we're already in oyster issues, Joe just told us. But we should do that anyway and just hear what's going on. And it took a long time to get even where we were back in 1995. I mean, that did take about six meetings, I think.
Yeah, it is I know you don't need another subcommittee, but and it is a smaller industry than it was back yep. then, actually. So it hopefully will be a little easier to put together.
If you want to coordinate with me, then we'll set something up.
And just another point of procedure, how would that work with subcommittees if we can put something together and they do something on speckled trout? We keep that off the agenda here, get it discussed in the subcommittees, just do a report for this to make recommendations to the commission.
Right. You probably have two opportunities. One, I don't know who else would be interested on this committee to be part of the summer plan subcommittee. Staff would be interested. What we did before was we simply worked with the industry directly and came up with a plan and took it to the commission. However, if there is one or two other people on the committee that would be interested in help piloting whatever change there may need to be to help that along, I think the commission would probably appreciate that the full committee reviewed this. And if there aren't one or two people, then I still think we should come back before the whole committee.
Okay.
A malapropism. So it is a big issue.
It's a good idea. Thank you.
Yes, very good idea.
And if you contact me, we'll get things started. And, you know, Jeff can find out if anyone else is interested.
I'll have to, Jeff.
Thank you.
This is commercial summer flounders.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you understand?
Recreational, my next plan.
Oh, okay.
And I know David's always interested. And David's been very faithful to summer flounder issues for more years than I care to remember. But once we can get a couple of strategies on how to handle the overages, then I'd like to share them. And then we get them to ASMFC and see what they want to do with them. We're in the infancy right now. You know, we're starting to think about it. I mean, there was really a dumb idea, I thought, that kind of cavalier idea that if there's an overage, this was actually told in the states of Massachusetts and Connecticut, if there was an overage, well, it would be okay. You just subtract that overage, whatever it is, from your 1998 allocation, and as long as it works out, you're all right. I mean, people are making things up on the fly. So, you know, we will come back with some options.
Okay. Thank you. Fish pots.
This is a crossover. I don't know if you guys read comics, but that's like when Silver Surfer ends up in a Spider-Man comic. But, I haven't seen that happen too often. But this is an item that started with C-Mac. So, so let's see. I have a couple slides. Okay, so this really started with our law enforcement division. In 2008, during the time when we were taking some serious cuts in the blue crab fishery, one of the things that happened was we reduced the pot limits by license category. Each license category took a cut, both for peeler pots and for hard crab pots. Law enforcement for the past couple of years has been talking to fisheries management staff that they're seeing some individuals attempt to find a way around this by fishing their crab pots. It's got their call rings in it. It's baited with menhaden. But they put a fish pot license tag on it. There's several categories of fish pot license, commercial fish pot license. One of them is greater than 300 pots. So no max limit, but you can fish more than 300 fish pots if you want to. There is a regulation in place that says that you can't harvest blue crabs from a fish pot. However, it's very difficult for law enforcement to actually enforce that because there's nothing that says you can't fish fish pots and crab pots in the same day. There's nothing that defines what a fish pot is, so the fact that they're fishing their crab pots with a fish pot license isn't necessarily illegal. The only way a law enforcement officer can write a ticket is if they actually see an individual fish that fish pot, or what is licensed as a fish pot, what's marked as a fish pot, and not call those blue crabs out of that catch. So they come on them and actually see them harvesting crabs from that licensed fish pot and not calling those crabs out. Actually, some cases were made. Those individuals came before the commission last month. But in the process of trying to clean this up, one thing that staff did, and this is through a recommendation from both fisheries and law enforcement staff, was to put a cap on the number of combined pots that you can fish. So if you're fishing your crab pots, you can only have an extra 10% of your fish pots. So what that would effectively do is cap the fish pots that might be out there from that greater than 300 to a max of 30. I mentioned there are multiple licenses. There's a 100 pot, a 300 pot, and a greater. But even the greater than 300 pot would be capped at 30 pots. It doesn't completely solve the situation. Hopefully, since the whole attempt of these individuals was to just set a lot of pots, it curtails it to some extent. One commission member, actually, who's also an FMAC member, Ken Neal, asked about defining a fish pot. And so that's why we're here before you tonight, asking some input on that. I can tell you staff has concerns since there are several different types of fish pots that are in play that we know are in play. They're, the biggest harvest in state waters would be for catfish and for minnows, followed probably by spot. Offshore, of course, there's sea bass, and there's even some sea bass pots that are fished within state waters. All of those pots are probably somewhat different. We know two other states where fish pots are a big part of their lives, Massachusetts and Rhode Island. I have their definitions up, and they kind of punted as far as actually defining the fish pot itself. I think it would be a challenge, but it's something that we are bringing for you for input. One last piece of information going into this is when we brought the max number of fish pots that can be fished before the commission, that was only put in place more or less, I'll say, for the main stem of the bay. There was already an exclusion for uprivers, for the three main rivers, an exclusion that came into play because we had issues with fish pots being fished as crab pots in earlier years. And so we said that you can't fish a fish pot 5 days before crab season starts. So we've added on to this exception that upriver areas aren't in play. So hopefully that protects the catfish fish pot harvest. We've added a mesh size exclusion that hopefully protects the minnow pot harvest. And we've added an exclusion for eel pots that wouldn't be into play with the max fish pot definition. One individual also came up before the commission during the public hearing and mentioned hoop pots or hoop nets, if you will. Since it's a gear type that is commonly used for, probably for the majority of what's harvested as fish pot, But again, there's no definition for that gear type. There's no separate license category for that gear type. So that was a lot of information in a little time. But as I said, the two main states that are dealing with fish pots in state waters really kind of punted on the definition. Black sea bass and scup pots, definitions pertaining to those to cull the catch and to allow escape panels have been in place. They're actually in place in our regulations as well. That's kind of coast-wide. It's gone through the federal plans and ASNFC plans for black sea bass and scup. But just defining an overall fish pot isn't something that we've seen looking through other states' regulations either.
So the problem is that these fishermen are using fish pots for crabs?
And they can use fishing crab pots, yes. As a licensed fish pot. But
fishing crab pots as a licensed fish pot.
Yeah. Simply as
fish pot license tags on them and setting them as crab traps.
Yeah.
Crabs out of them.
Are you allowed to keep the crabs out of
them? No, it is illegal, but it has to be seen to be proven.
Rather than try to define what the pot is, could you do something like when the ocean rockfish fishermen are fishing, they've got to fly a flag that states what they're doing? Could you do something along those lines and make them, do one or the other? So they crab, and if they want to fish pots, they've got to come and put the crabs off and define themselves as a fish pot fisherman and go back out.
Yes, please.
I think what we have here is just sort of the pilot program. So we met with law enforcement, and we met with the law enforcement officer and the police officer who had made the cases. And those individuals have yet to arrive at the commission for their greeting, but they will soon after that, of course. So we're just trying to get started. And we looked at a number of options, including we looked at things such as if you have a crab pot license, you don't get a fish pot license. We decided that's pretty bad. That would be pretty strict because people get crab pot licenses just because they're afraid to lose them. They never use them. As a matter of fact, almost 400 of 1,200 crab pot licenses aren't used typically since 2003. So then we looked at, well, if you're fishing or setting your crab pots, then you shouldn't have any fish pots. And then we looked at, which I forgot, frankly, by the time that Joe said I changed my device here a little bit, we looked at if you set, you can have the 10%. And law enforcement seemed to be happy with this cap at 10% to start out with. But they can circumvent, harvesters can circumvent. And, they were stacking the same color markings on the buoys and doing all sorts of things that you had to be staked out. I mean, the cases that were made took a few days to make the two cases. So I think we're starting on the right track. What I'm really having a difficulty with is when I see this, it doesn't really tell me that we're ever going to arrive at this podium and tell the commission that we've solved it. Have a fish pot definition that doesn't need to have like 10 exceptions to it. I'm going to invoke his name, but if Jack Travelstead, who was chief of fisheries for 31 years, didn't feel that you could define a fish pot, I would say that's pretty good indication as to why, we probably are going to go through the motions here. I hate to say that. We'll do the best we can, but at the end result, it's going to be tough to do. Going to be really tough to do. You have to do other methods similar to what you're talking about. One method is to work on blue crab so that someday, and this is just a fledgling idea of Joe's and mine, that it doesn't matter how many pots you have. Everyone's screaming about all the extra pots. We'd like to have the fishery, so go ahead and set your extra pots. We've already started on that with crabs, not to talk about your other committees, but it's a vessel limit. So, yeah, are people cheating on their pots? Yes. Do they tell us they're cheating on it? Yes, they tell us we're cheating. So We ought to work on the crab end of it since that's really his focus. I think it may be tough. I mean, Joe's pointed out.
Yeah, it's a tough idea to try to do something. And if
I
may, there's one more thing that I wanted to add that we didn't really have a chance to speak to the commission about, because the commission started having concerns with how many people are being affected. I run the data on, you know, trying to show what is this fish pot harvest in this state. We have, for those of you that don't know, commercial harvesters, when they report, they report by water body, so a specific area. The three main rivers are divided into three areas. The main stem of the Chesapeake Bay is divided up into four areas. Going even larger than that, if I just took a system, the whole James River, the whole York, the whole Rappahannock, all of the Chesapeake Bay, it's hard for me to break it up by species and show the data because I run into confidentiality issues. That means there aren't even three people reporting in an area for that species. You know, obviously, as you can imagine, there aren't a lot of species that are targeted by fish pots. The ones that do it, it's a small fishery. Remove catfish. So I couldn't even show species specific. This is all species combined, 1 year fish pot harvest by the main systems. Even some of the systems for all species combined I had to pull out. But you see that most of it's in the James River, followed by the Rep. The two together are pretty much 90% of the harvest. 95% of that in the James is catfish. 90% of that in the Rappahannock is catfish. So when you... That's not to say that there aren't other individuals that would be impacted. There are people that, have a market for oyster toadfish. There are people that have a good market for pufferfish in the bay. But the amount, the number of individuals that we're talking about that are legally harvesting fish from fish pots, and that's a part, it's a big part of their livelihood. It's a small number of people.
I have a quick question. You had mentioned different definitions of fish pots. I didn't really see a definition of a crab pot, and you were saying that you can get a ticket if the fish pot is used to obtain crabs. So I was just curious what the definition of a crab pot is. It's the size.
The regulation states that crabs can't be harvested by
into the fish pot.
By right.
How would I know? I'm driving my boat and I see like some buoy. How do I know by the marking of that buoy what pot it is?
Well, the crab pot, as far as the definition, it does have dimensions for mesh size, and it does have cull ring requirements. So I mean, that's a big part of it. Same thing with eel pots. There are some dimensions defined.
The buoy, just to answer the question, the buoy, if it had a C before the four numbers, so let's say it had C4545, that's supposed to be a crab pot attached to that buoy.
And the four numbers is the Social Security number?
No. It's part of their MRC ID number. What used to be called the last four here, you can have up to six numbers now. But the four to six numbers would be behind the C. That's a crab pot.
Okay.
If it has a P, it's a peeler pot. If it has an F, it's a fish pot.
Well, thank you.
And if it's an R, it's a recreational crab pot.
That
if you follow the rules.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
I only see one problem with that. Spot came up with an idea, and I tell you where I see the problem. If I'm straight bass fishing in the ocean and I have a flag up, and I take the flag down, they don't know I'm straight bass fishing. But if they stop me and I have straight bass on the boat, my flag's not up, I get a ticket. They put a flag up while they're fishing their fish pots, they don't send any law enforcement, they put the flag down and they take the crabs ashore. See, I still have to take my straight bass. I'm still in violation. As long as you're still to the point that that man doesn't see them harvest those crabs from something marked as a fish pot,
yes,
he still can't do anything.
It would still require law enforcement to see it. But, again, as Rob said, we're taking steps. That would still be one more step. Law enforcement would have one less hurdle. They wouldn't actually have to see them. If they just saw them fish two types of pots, because what we're being told is they're all together.
Right.
And they happen to see them fishing.
The commission had an interesting day that day beyond speckled trout, because when the gentleman said he fished a hoop pot, I asked him to come up. We never really got an example. a few commission members all of a sudden withdrawing motions, and they weren't going to support it and everything else. They finally did support our measures, 5-3 vote. I mean, it was a day that was much different to those who have been on the commission and that was the way.
We appreciate the information. Is there anything you need from us?
No.
Okay.
And, you know, I guess if you do know fish potters, give us a call and you know, because we're not trying in any way, you know, to limit the fish pot harvest. This is really a crab loophole, if you will.
Well, somebody, my question, somebody marks their cork for a crab pot and puts a fish pot on it. That's a violation, right? Correct?
Well, that's just it. There is no fish pot definition, so you can fish your crab pot with a fish pot.
But there is a definition for a crab pot.
Yes.
And
if all you wanted to do was only harvest fish, you know, puffers or you know, the occasional legal-sized flounder is going to move in there. From what used to be your crab pot, but is now only going to be used to harvest fish, that is perfectly legal.
But Wayne, what you just said, if he had a crab pot buoy on it, then they expect to find the call rings and everything else if they pull it up.
No, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
okay.
What you meant.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. If it's got the crab pot buoy on it, yes, then it is subject to have.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions from the committee? Any questions from the audience? All right. Thank you. That leaves dogfish permits, transfers.
How y'all doing?
Pretty good, you?
Sorry we didn't make the agenda. Anyway, my name is Chris Walker. I'm from Chincoteague. We're here tonight to ask for a temporary transfer of a dogfish permit due to medical reasons. It would be my wife's permit. She's undergoing some cancer treatment now at this time. Not really guaranteed about how long this is going to take to clear it up. But there's an opportunity to help one of my fellow fishermen here. And I would like to do that with y'all's blessing, if that would be possible.
Okay. this is new for us. So is that this now our purview?
You know, you've been through the gamut on dogfish, and we last left off. Joe Cimino presented you some criteria, the reduction from 120 plus down to 81 permittees. The regulation doesn't have anything about transfer. So right now, I think what we can do is, and I have talked to the commissioner, this proposition was that the commissioner should be able to have up to 5. That's not a magic number. That's just up to 5 transfers a year for legitimate criteria. So even when the commercial fisherman registration license started in 1993, and then all the other licenses that became limited, they started with at least some very rudimentary criteria, such as if you had medical reasons, then that would get you into the commercial registration. If you had military service, that could get you into it. As we went through time with some of the fisheries, it really became way too liberal. I mean, to the point where we're now working with one committee to tighten up agency or agents. Exceptions really were pretty large of an issue, even for the commercial fisherman registration license. So the regulation for sharks and dogfish doesn't have anything, any avenue to allow someone who has even medical or military criteria that they have met to receive a transfer. We think, in talking about this, we think that having the commissioner being able to approve up to five and maybe not even five transfers a year would be better than trying to get all of us to rush into a situation where we start looking on how to transfer dogfish permits while there's still a lot of latent effort out there. So it would be a small amount of transfers is the benefit. Right now there is a medical situation in the regulation, not military, but just medical and family, right?
Oh, military.
It is. Okay.
Adult and then family, all that. But again, there is a health.
So we have something there. It's just a matter of what the criteria should be. Now, I wasn't sure from what you said. I understood what you said about your wife, but you mentioned this gentleman as well.
Yeah, I'd like to transfer it and try to help him out.
Okay.
Or she would like to transfer it.
So, you know, even the way this started may not be as complicated. We also had another gentleman in here, Vonnie Pruitt, at a former meeting where he was looking for a transfer as well. I don't know the circumstances there. But I think until we're ready to really get to where the fishery, where some of you at least have stated many times the fishery should be, down to, I've heard, 40, 35 individuals to where you can manage a fishery, I think until then, we ought to at least have just a very few transfers.
I'd ask Rob to put this on the agenda. We know, we're hoping in the future that the market situation is going to get better on spiny dogfish. It's actually got worse. The market's there for the fish, but the dollar's got so strong the price has dropped again. So if it gets any lower, you know, I'm not going to go, and I think a lot of people will not go. Right now, for example, Spot's going to eat it. He's losing more money, but he knows, you know, sometimes you're better off with less and have something than you are everybody quit on you. This is a way we could consider a few transfers. The fishery doesn't die. You're allowing people in with different criteria. Right now it's medical. It could be military service and stuff. I think it should be more like extraordinary things that the commissioner should be able to look at, not just, you know, the state of Virginia is not allowed to just use financial. Because everybody would say, I'm broke, I need the money, you know, and I'm on the commission. Everybody's kids were starving. I don't know how, you know, we have as many kids in school because everybody, you're always taking their livelihood away. So financial is not, it can be part of the consideration, but it cannot be the only consideration. I think we need to give the commissioner some flexibility. It doesn't hurt the fishery because it's going to be a small number of people. And now all the permits are active, some more so than others. But the ones that were inactive are gone. So you had to have an active permit to keep it now because they weeded out the people who had not gone. So like I say, some permits are more active than others. But in a case like this, you know, this gentleman, I'll tell you a little bit about him because I know him fairly well. He's a lobster pot fisherman and he's a monk fisherman. So he's using large mesh gill net all the time when he's monk fishing. I talked to Jack Travelstead when they were starting all this lobster stuff in the Northeast. I was on the commission then, and before that, even when it first started, I was on the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. We were talking about we could go to limited entry to help two people. At that time, it was two people in the state of Virginia that lobster fish because you're off way further than I've ever been. I don't know how far off. He has 40, 50 miles anyway. Jack and I discussed it several times, and we could went to limited entry. But that would only help keeping other boats from landing in Virginia. The problem we have now is we have boats from the Northeast that are landing north of Virginia that's working all day, and we're a de minimis state, so we make up a very small portion of the fishery. And they can, if they landed to us, they would ruin us, but they're landing somewhere else. We're still taking his livelihood away. So he's out there monk fishing. He's throwing all of his dogfish overboard. They're not doing him any good. They're not doing us any good. And it's probably not doing the dogfish any good. But I'll take it back. It probably is doing us some good because the dogfish is going to inherit the world. Thinks all they want to about the meek. But, you know, I think this is something we should do. And there was another gentleman that he knew that I feel like should have had a permit all along. He reported federal, not state. And then he had somebody else doing his bookkeeping, and it turned out they didn't do it timely. And the stuff got in too late, and they missed that time frame. So there is some different circumstances all along the way. I think five is a good workable number, and it don't have to be five. It can be two. It can be one. I mean, the commissioner should have the ability to look at the circumstances and decide. So, you know, I'd like to make a motion that we move forward with this and recommend this to the commission.
Okay. Question. You were suggesting a temporary transfer, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
And how long would a temporary transfer be good for?
We don't have that criteria.
I'm sorry.
It would be okay until it was transferred back.
Okay. So it's in discretion of the commission. It's not a set number.
I don't think we've ever had one because limited entry has just been around 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years. So we haven't really had that case. What typically happens in other fisheries, rockfish, commercial fishermen can transfer their tags just for that one season. And then it comes back to the person who has the quota. So it can be done that way. For crabs, it's a little more cumbersome. Someone will transfer their license, and then they might get a transfer from someone else. The crab is really a bad situation. So this is sort of a first. In the back of my head a little bit, I think there was someone else, but that my staff had asked me about what medical situation is needed. But for your situation, I mean, clearly if the commissioner reviews the documentation, you know, that's fine. I think the way it was written was not so much on a family member. You have
to be like if it was me.
Yeah. I think that's the way it was written, and that's why this is a little bit different. So if everyone understands that, in other words, the regulation is really if I am the holder of the permit, the limited entry permit, and I have illness or something like that, a medical situation, then I can transfer. Here we're looking at a situation where Chris is asking to transfer because he's going to be doing other things. His wife is ill. He's going to transfer it to this gentleman here. So that's why I think the commissioner gets involved in this transfer anyway. I mean, by regulation, but especially since this isn't, you know, it's a family member involving with this transfer. Is that?
Chris, it's your license?
Yeah. Did you say I'm transferring mine? We're going to
yes,
be transferring hers.
Okay.
Yeah. She's going to be transferring hers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straightforward. Yeah. So, your wife's transferring to, what's your name?
Joe Kelly.
You're Joe Kelly. Oh,
no,
nice.
Joe Kelly.
All these years.
Another Irishman. The famous Joe Kelly. Okay. All right.
So this is straightforward.
Okay. So we have a situation where we don't have regulations necessarily.
No, we have a medical exception.
But
now that it's clear to me that.
But the problem is this. This is where
situation.
This is where this gets more complicated. She definitely has a medical reason.
Okay.
And we hope, you know, she makes out the finest.
Absolutely.
So she can transfer it to Joe.
Okay.
But then Joe could not transfer it to her if her health improved. Because his health would have to be bad. Because it can only be a medical transfer back. So what we're asking for is giving them the ability to do this temporary 2 years or whatever. And maybe by then we can work through things.
Okay.
And work out a plan. You know, we're not in a hurry. We don't want to do anything, you know, in the middle of the night and have all kinds of problems. This is something we can do long term. It's only a handful of individuals. It's only three we know.
Right.
You know, we discussed it up and down, and it's only three people we know that should have
a
permit.
The regulation just wasn't smart enough.
Okay, so we need to work it out, but he's
He has a situation.
To me that if a license is transferred like this on a health reason, if someone is in better health, then they can get the license.
Okay.
Yes, that still takes the commission.
Okay.
I'll second Ernie's motion.
Ernie, okay. Any?
I would say, like Ernie said, extraordinary measures, because Mike Shackelford has been before us several times in the commission, and I bought Mike's dogs back in the 90s and the 2000s before you had to have a permit, and it's to my understanding his sister didn't do the reporting or something along those lines, but I feel like, if we're going to look at this, we should, he's one of the three we're talking about here, and I think it's a great idea to just do a minimal amount of people so we can keep this moving forward.
Can we clarify the motion real quick?
Yes. The motion is to support
allowing the commissioner to have the ability to transfer up to 5 permits a year for extraordinary circumstances outside of the one that's already stated.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, all in favor of the motion, raise your right hand.
Good count there.
Okay. First, none. All right. You got it.
Tom's still
there. Okay. That included Tom, by the way. Okay. That's all the agenda items. While these gentlemen are here from Chincoteague, there is a meeting in Chincoteague on the 30th to try to learn about your use of the area, the wind energy area off the coast.
Yeah. I'm aware of that.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Catherine,
yeah, all right.
Yeah.
And there's a meeting in Wachuprig as well on the 26th, I think it is. You should have cards for those as well. So wanted all the commercial fishermen to know that. Yes, Bob, new business?
I think Wes Lowe has something he wants to mention. It's not on the agenda. I think it's something just has come up. Wes?
I have something more about the question.
Okay, thank you. Please come up. It's the new business section. While he's on the way up, do we have a rockfish meeting next week?
We have the 24th is the commission meeting.
Okay, we don't have a hearing or anything like that. That was
just the commission.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir, please.
Yes.
State your name for the record.
Wes Blow.
Okay, right.
It's concerning tog fishing.
Okay.
Entirely different from what y'all been talking about, but it's a request. As Mr. O'Reilly alluded to earlier, the extreme cold temperatures this year has changed a lot of fishing. This morning, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, it was 38.7 degrees. In 2012, it was 51.08 the same day at the same time. So a lot of fishing has changed. Citations that have been reported this year for tog, and I'm just using that as a reference because we have no other quote or way of counting how many fish are caught, but in comparison to the citations versus the togs, there's very few caught. There's been 10 caught this year. That's down 61.53% for last year. For the same date, March 17th. So, 2012, we are down 69.69% of togs citations caught, which I believe reflects what have been caught altogether. So what I'm asking, in light of the extreme cold weather that we have had, I would like to see the advisory committee ask the commission to extend the tog season about 2 weeks into May, with May 15th being the end of the tog season instead of April 30th. On February 24th, a similar weather-related extension was given to commercial oyster harvesters because of the severe weather. Water temperatures currently are way down compared to similar times in recent years, so the ocean tog season has basically been shut down, and the bay season will be very late to start.
Okay. All right, we appreciate that. Does staff have an opinion on this? I hope so.
Rob?
That's all right, Rennie. I think they're debating it right now.
It's fairly, fortunately for Wes, and we understand the request, it's a fairly simple thing. our management plan is approved by the ASMFC board. To change that plan, we have to go back before the board, which also means a TC review.
Right.
That's not going to happen between now and April 30th. I'm not even sure. Is the TC slated to meet, Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a full agenda, I think, on a Friday. They plug it in at the last second. They're not real big on that. But then the management board wouldn't even meet possibly until May. I'm not even sure if they're on the agenda or not. Are they on the agenda for May?
They must be.
Yes, but yeah, not for a very good reason. They just completed the stock assessment, and they're looking at new management regions. Again, kind of like what you're seeing for Flounder, Delaware, Virginia, and Maryland. Things aren't looking bad, but they're not looking great. We actually are in overfished over. Well, we are in an overfishing status still, even for our region. The other two regions, which they're arguing what they're going to be, are in terrible shape. So I think, I don't know that this would be even met with the reception, you know, anywhere near the reception that such a consideration was for striped bass.
And remember, the difference with striped bass is under an ITQ. As long as we don't go above our ITQ, our actual overall quota,
right,
we're fine. That we get a little bit more leeway under that style fishery. This is not an ITQ fishery, what we're talking about here. It would have a much, much bigger hill to climb to get it over. It would have to go through a TC review and a board approval. So it's a big difference between the two.
There are no phone calls we could make just to go around it or anything.
Well, you can make phone calls, Mr. Chairman, but realistically, it's a cumbersome process. For example, with the striped bass issue, I was able to secure, and we really didn't need the ASMFC blessings all the way anyway, but I received five states to come back to me. And the management unit for striped bass is North Carolina up. It's just a matter of too many hurdles.
So you don't think we can do this?
No.
Okay.
Don't see any way. If we could, I think y'all know our track record, we'd try. But this one, there is too many hurdles.
All right. Can we put something before the ASMFC so that we have that flexibility in the future? To extend when we know we're not catching anything. Right.
It's the reverse situation of speckled trout. I went to the not to the Tautog stock assessment, but I saw all the results, and it's pretty bad when you're overfishing or overfished and overfishing like our neighbors to the north. So that sort of rules everything. Everyone gets tunnel vision once that happens. All they can think about is making things better. So they're not thinking about one state,
mm-hmm,
thinking about all the states together.
Okay.
And, to give, I think the kind of reply we would get would be, well, the stock is in poor shape as it is. So that's the way things are.
All right. Sorry, Wes, that doesn't look like we can do anything to help you out. One other notice, there is there'll be a recreational fishermen's information meeting within the next month on the Virginia Wind area. And what they're after is they want to see where you're fishing, where you track through the area, whatever, so that we can help apply how that's going to affect you, what your losses are, if any, that kind of thing. Yes, sir.
How much do you know about them allowing us in the area?
There may be times, as it stands right now, there may be times during construction when they're putting up the towers that we can't go in there. Other than that, it's supposed to be wide open for us, just like the oil rigs in the Gulf, and it should be some beautiful fishing.
For you.
Well,
it's more Hanks for me.
Making it a sanctuary like you did it in California.
No. No discussion on that yet at all. And there will be commercial fishing allowed as well. And these are, the first two are just two turbines put up to try to learn how to do it more efficiently, quite frankly. And then they'll put to the other wind energy area that could be 70 or more turbines. But we get to comment on how those are laid out, so we may even be able to allow you to trawl between the turbines, or at least set pots and that kind of thing.
Has there been any mention of running the power back to shore? Is that going to be buried? Is that going to be covered with rock?
It'll be buried, and they'll cover that all. But it'll be buried. Originally, it was 6 feet or 2 meters or something like that. Now there's some talk about it might not be that shallow, but all of that's got to be discussed, and your input will have a lot to do with how that's done.
Thank you.
You're welcome. When we need your help, need your input. Anything else come before the committee? We didn't approve the minutes this morning, or this morning. It feels like it, doesn't it? Any objection to the minutes from the last meeting? Motion to approve?
Approved.
Second? Okay, we're approved. Motion to adjourn. Motion to adjourn. Thank you. I'm going to see you.